Hey, this is Jim Larrabee. I'm the lead pastor here at First Christian Church, and this is our podcast. My prayer is that the words you hear encourage you, that they challenge you, that they build your faith and draw you closer to Jesus. So enjoy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I want to welcome everybody here. If you didn't notice, I'm not him. I am not the lead pastor. My name is Don Knapp, and I am the adult ministry pastor here at First Christian. Jim is at home in mourning. Alabama lost. So Jen told me he was still weeping when she left. No, actually, Jim has some things that he needed to do, and he needed a Sunday off. So reluctantly, we gave him the day off. So Jim asked me to give the message about 2 weeks ago, he asked me. And as normal, what I normally do is I start praying and just looking for direction from the Holy Spirit. And this one was pretty quick. No sooner had I prayed about it and started seeking him, my daily conversations all kind of started coming up with the same thing over and over and over again. And it seemed to be miracles. So not being one to argue with the Holy Spirit, I said, okay, all right, I'll speak on miracles. So this morning, the message is going to be on one of two miracles that is spoken in all four Gospels. I'll be speaking from the book of John, chapter 6. So if you either want to turn or open up your apps or do whatever you do to get to that place or just read it on the screen, it's up to you. That's the first time I've looked and seen myself. I'm pretty big. Now it's distracting because now I don't know what they're showing behind me. But one of the first things I wanted to do was so many of us have different definitions of what a miracle really is. I think all of us recognize, the big miracles in life. But I wanted to give you the definition or, what they teach us in seminary. So let me give you just the dictionary version of a miracle. Now, it's an event that involves the direct and powerful action of God, transcending the ordinary laws of nature and defying common expectations of behavior. So those are that would be like the big ones, like the resurrection. They've tried to say all kinds of things and explain it away, but they really can't. So that would be one. Another one would be, raising Lazarus from the dead. That would be another one. The virgin birth. That would be those big miracles that people would say, oh yeah, that's a miracle. But as I was getting ready to do this message, that doesn't for me, and this is Dawn speaking, that doesn't for me answer those miracles that God works in our lives every day that we either have seen, experienced, or heard about. I mean, I understand that, how that definition fits many miracles. But for me, I needed kind of a broader definition. I needed something that for me would explain how a person who has struggled with addictions their whole life gives their heart to Christ and suddenly that addiction disappears. I had a man, and this was one of the reasons I spoke about miracles, is comes into my office, he's there to pick something up. We start talking, and he says, oh, hey, my pastor has asked me to speak at the church this Sunday. And he says, because I'm a miracle. He said he was broken, addicted to crack. He says, I am strung out so bad. I am living under a bridge. And he says, suddenly I have this desire to be on my knees. And he says, I'm on my knees and I'm begging God to help me. And he says, suddenly it felt like someone had ripped open his chest and it just poured in God. He said, I can't explain it any other way than that. And he said, now I'm still struggling, but he says, I don't have that addiction anymore. He goes, it is a miracle that I'm standing here today. And so for me, it also explains the miracles that God works in marriages. I mean, people come to me sometimes and they're broken and they're in the just on their way to divorce, and they refocus their life on Christ. Or for some of them, they give their hearts to Christ and that marriage is healed. It's brought back together. It's a miracle. The family is saved. And how lives are restored. When I went to school in Phoenix, I volunteered at the Phoenix Rescue Mission, and I got to know several of the chaplains there, and they have unbelievable stories. But one of the stories that truly touched my heart was one of the chaplains there, in fact, the senior chaplain there, was on his way, way back when, was on his way to kill himself. He was addicted to drugs. He had been in and out of prison his whole life. His family didn't want anything to do with him, and he was walking to the train station to step in front of a train. He knew the exact time schedule. And as he's walking in Phoenix to go kill himself, there's a man outside of a building smoking a cigarette. And as he walks by, this man out of the blue has no idea who he is, walks out, as he's standing there smoking, says, "Hey, you hungry?" And he's taking a smoke of his cigarette, and the guy says, "Well, I might as well die on a full stomach. I got like an hour." He says, "Yeah." Yeah, he goes, "I'm hungry." So the man says, "Well, we're celebrating the retirement of someone here, and we have plenty of food. Why don't you come on in and join us?" Guess who was smoking the cigarette outside on the porch? The pastor of that church. He was retiring. And he just happened to be standing outside, and he said, normally, the pastor said he didn't stand out there because he didn't want people to see him smoking. But since he was retiring, he didn't care. But again, a miracle, right? Because if he hadn't been standing there, that man wouldn't have walked by. He wouldn't have seen him. That man came in, gave his heart to Christ later that evening, and became the lead chaplain at the Phoenix Rescue Mission. A miracle. A miracle. But you know, miracles have a purpose. There's a reason God performs miracles. And in the New Testament, those miracles pointed to the identity of Jesus Christ. They told people who saw them who this man was, and who wanted, and people wanted more. In the book of John, chapter 20, it says, "And truly, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these were written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name." Miracles point us to Christ, and not just the big ones. I know you guys could all tell stories here about the miracles God has done in your life. You know, before or after you gave your heart to Christ, how he saved you, how he maybe kept you from harm. And because I'm the one up here, I get to tell the story. And it's a story that I shouldn't be standing here. Many of you know that I'm a retired police officer. And probably 8-9 years into my career, I should have died. I was riding up Garden Street with a fellow motor officer, enjoying the beautiful weather, and as we got to a certain part of Garden Street, the alert tone went off on our radio, and what that does is it alerts you that there's a hot call coming in or an important call coming in, so they want you to pay attention to what's going on the radio. So as we're riding up the street, the alert tone goes off, and it says there is an armed robbery in progress at a residence. And they give the address of the residence. As that address went out, guess where I was at? Right in front of the address. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I mean, look over it, because usually you look over to see where you need to go. In this case, I looked over and see where I needed to stop. So we slam on our brakes and we take cover behind, I kid you not, a 1-foot brick wall. I mean, feeling safe, got the building, waiting for backup, and then my mind starts working, which is a terrible thing. And I think to myself, hey, in armed robberies, especially residential armed robberies, what had happened is an armed robber wearing a mask had come into this house, tied up the owners, and was ransacking the house. Well, meanwhile, while he's ransacking the house, a child broke free, climbed out a window, and went next door to call the cops. And that's how we got the call. In most situations, they're long gone by the time we get there. But I'm thinking, well, in case he is still there, one of the things that happens in residential robberies is they steal your car. I don't know why. I guess they walk there and they need a way to get away. But 9 times out of 10, they will take the car. And I see this brand new Cadillac in the driveway. I mean, everybody in Santa Barbara's rich, right? Just joking. So there's this brand new Cadillac, and I think to myself, okay, the last thing we need is a pursuit through the city of Santa Barbara, us chasing a brand new Cadillac. So I leave cover, which I know is a very bad thing, and I walk up to the tire, and I'm trying to loose the air out of the tire. Now, I'm right-handed. Anybody know what I have in my right hand? My gun, yeah. So I put my gun away, I take out my pin, I flatten the tire, I put my pin back, and I stand up, and I'm staring a .45 caliber gun in my face. The suspect has come out of the house through the garage. And I think that's it. There is nothing I can do. I heard nothing, but what I don't know is everybody behind me is yelling for this guy to drop his gun. Now, all I see is the gun, his eyes, and I know you can't believe this, but I saw in my eyes, or in his eyes, that he was going to pull the trigger. There was no hesitation. I just thought he's going to pull the trigger. For no reason, he suddenly turns and runs back into the house. After a little while, he surrenders. After some negotiation, he surrenders. He was a deserter from the military. He was a lieutenant from the Marine Corps. So it wasn't a question that he didn't know how to use his gun. He knew how to use it. And they asked him, why didn't you kill the motor officer? That would have been me. And he says, I don't know. Because I was going to pull the trigger. And then I decided not to. That's a miracle. God wasn't done with me. He still had a purpose for me in this life. And what I do is I remember that whenever I'm in question, whenever I'm doubting whatever I should be doing, whatever I'm doing, whenever I question what I'm here, I remember that time where I shouldn't be here. And I think God has a purpose for me. God has something he still wants me to do. I point to Jesus every time I remember that scenario and think to myself, that was a miracle. I shouldn't be standing here. And you know something, I always remember that as long as I'm here on this earth, God can use me. Over and over and over again. But let me talk about that miracle that I want to talk about in the book of John. Okay, God did many, many, many miracles. And I'm gonna lay odds. If I was a betting man, which I'm not, unless it's sports. If I was a betting man, I bet somebody here can tell me Jesus' first miracle. Water to wine. How come you remember that? No, I'm just kidding. No, everybody remembers that one. Everybody remembers the water to wine. But you know, one that also most people remember is the feeding of the 5,000. 5 loaves of bread and 2 fishes fed 5,000 men. So let me read from the book of John, verse 6, verses 1 through 14. And it says, sometime after this, Jesus crossed to the far shore of the Sea of Galilee, that is, the Sea of Tiberias. And a great crowd of people followed him because they saw the signs he had performed by healing the sick. Then Jesus went up on a mountainside and sat down with his disciples. The Jewish Passover festival was near. When Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming toward him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?" He asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. Philip answered him, "It would take more than half a year's wages to buy enough bread for each one to have a bite." Another one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. "Here is a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish. But how far will they go among so many?" Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." There was plenty of grass in that place, and they sat down. About 5,000 men were there. Jesus then took the loaves, gave thanks, and distributed to those who were seated as much as they wanted. He did the same with the fish. When they all had enough to eat, he said to his disciples, "Gather the pieces that are left over. Let nothing be wasted." So they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of loaf of the 5 barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. After the people saw the sign Jesus performed, they began to say, "Surely this is the prophet who has come into the world." That miracle pointed many to Jesus. In fact, Jesus used that miracle the next day to say that he was the bread of life. And I'm sure many of you have heard that too. But all the miracles pointed back to Jesus. But you know, sometimes it's not just the miracle itself that points us to Jesus. It's the interaction that the people who are in the miracle have. Isn't that when things happen in your life, it's not necessarily just the big thing, it's the change that it comes about inside you, the difference that it makes in your life. So what I want to do is I want to talk about Philip, Andrew, and the boy who gave his lunch. And I would wager that as you listen, you can hear a little bit of these people in each one of us. I know I did. I know when I was doing this, I was thinking, "Oh yeah, I've done that before. Oh yeah, I've done that too." We can learn from their responses and from their words what that miracle means in your life. So let me first talk about Philip. Okay, so here's the problem with Philip. Now, Philip had been walking with Jesus for probably over a year. And it says he had seen miracle after miracle after miracle. But what happens when Jesus asks him, "Where are we going to find food for these people?" And here it was a test. Now, many of us think a test comes with, you know, severe trials and tribulations, but sometimes our tests come just in the ordinary things we do in life. Now, I was driving to a meeting here at the church, and I'm running late, and as I turn on to one of my, on Clark Avenue, I see a guy walking on Clark. He's got a limp. He's carrying a gas can. He's obviously run out of gas. Anybody want to take a guess if I stopped or not? I would love to tell you, Cindy, I stopped. I didn't stop because I was late to the meeting. And Jim makes fun of you when you show up late to meetings. And I'm thinking, oh, I don't want Jim to make fun of me because then other pastors jump in and make fun of me. I don't want to do that. So I drove right by the guy. I get to the Clark Avenue on ramp and I think, oh, really? You drove by a guy who needed gas? So I cranked a U-turn, drove back, and by that time, the guy was gone. Somebody else had probably picked him up. Now, I give myself a C- for that test. Because I drove by him. If I had stopped, I'd have probably gotten an A, but I drove right by him, so I got a C-. But that's a simple test of where my heart was. Where was I thinking? What was I thinking about? You know, where was Philip's focus? What was he thinking about? I mean, like I said, Philip saw his miracle after miracle, but that's not where he was thinking at the time. His mind was somewhere down here in the world. He was thinking about his needs and you know, what he could provide. Not he, but what Philip could provide. You know, Philip, literally, when Jesus asked him, "Where are we going to get the feed these people?" I mean, gosh, if Philip was focused on Jesus, he'd have said, "Dude, feed them. You can feed him. He watched them turn water to wine. He could have said, hey, just feed him. But that's not where his focus was. It was on something else completely. You know, Philippians 4:19 says, and my God will meet all your needs according to the riches of his glory in Christ Jesus. Where is our focus today? You know, when we don't focus on God, we limit what God does. Because who does he use? I mean, don't go around. He uses miracles, but who does he use? He uses us. He uses us to show the love of Christ. He uses us to reach hands out to other people. He uses us to direct people to him. We are his tools. God can do the miraculous. So trust him to provide the resources. You know, I think there's a little bit of Philip in all of us, isn't there? You know, we perform the mundane tasks every day and we put God where? Somewhere back behind us. I got this one, God. I'll take care of this. We don't give him the mundane. Since we don't give him the ordinary, when the extraordinary happens, or maybe just when the unusual happens, he's not our first thought. He's our second, third, fourth thought, even if at all. And the problem is, if you're not focused on him, it takes time to refocus. You know, how many of you got up this morning and the first thing you reached for was your phone, and not to read a Bible verse, but to check to see Facebook, or to check and see if anybody texted you, or to see what the latest news was? And where does that take you? That takes you away from him, and it focuses on this world. And there's a lot of issues in this world that we don't have solutions for. He does, but we don't. And all it does is bring fear, anxiety, and tension. You know, I don't think it surprises anyone here to say that we have problems, right, as Christians? Anybody here show up and not have any single problem? Because if you did, I'm going to come to your house for lunch. No, we all have problems. And it's not that we don't have problems. It's how we handle those problems. What do you do? Do you look like the world when you handle your problems? Or do you look like Christ when you handle your problems? And so often, especially in this day and age, we look like the world. Our response is very similar to the world. And the thing is, nothing takes Jesus by surprise. Jesus knows what's going to happen. COVID was not a surprise. Jesus, it's not a surprise to Jesus because he knows all things. Now let me ask you this, as Christians, and I'm speaking to myself here too, are we passing the test? You know, I argued with I brought this up to several people and asked whether I should put this in the message, and they said I should, and so if you have a problem, contact Jim. But in Europe, during the Black Plague, millions and millions of people died. And it was caused by fleas on rats. Now, they didn't know that at the time. All they knew is that if somebody in the household got the plague, the only thing you could do was to flee. So thousands upon thousands of people fled towns, leaving towns just full of nothing but sick people. Secular historians wrote about a particular group of people that instead of running from the cities, ran to the cities. And you know who they were? Christians. They responded totally different than the world. Now, I'm not telling you not to be cautious. God says to love him with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. But what I'm saying is, how are we responding? Do we look like this world when we talk, when we act, Stop letting things divide the church. Focus on Him and what He wants you to do. Be like those Europeans in the 13th century and run to help people. Not to criticize, but to help. So my question is, are we passing the test? You know, and like Philip, we limit God sometimes when we respond in our secular response. Because if Philip answers him and says, 8 month wages would not buy enough bread for each one to have a bite. Philip only saw the problem. Anybody ever done that? You're focusing so much on the problem, you can't see the solution. And even though the solution may be sitting right next to you, like your wife telling you, honey, just do. Oh, shh, you don't know. Shh, quiet. God only speaks to me. And that's when I get hit in the side of the head. No, but sometimes we're so focused on the problem, we just don't see the solution. God has the solution. You know, if we focus on the power of God and His miracles, we can see those miracles every day in life. You know, let's not live down to our expectations, but let's live up to God's power. So let me talk about Andrew. Andrew did okay. He started off okay. Come on, I mean, how many people here, when you saw 5,000 people, would look at a small lunch of two fish and five barley loaves and say, hey, we can use this? So Andrew did pretty good, right? But then what happens? Andrew lets the world direct his next statement. Andrew says, but how far will they go among so many? Isn't that word, don't we use that word a lot? But. Oh, God can do it, but. We do that every day, right? Hey, I'm going to tithe, but I need more money in my savings account. I'm going to volunteer at the church, but I don't have enough time. Oh, I'm going to do this for God, but I'll have to wait a minute. God can use whatever you have. You know, if you want to read a story about somebody who trusted God and gave Him his all, you can go to 1 Kings 18. And there's a man there named Elijah. Now, Elijah is in the middle of a battle with 300 Baal prophets. And it's actually not really a battle, it's a contest. Basically, Elijah has challenged the prophets of Baal to burn up a sacrifice. And the prophets of Baal go first, calling on this on their god that doesn't exist. And Elijah starts making fun of them. You know, hey, speak louder. Maybe your god's taking a nap. And they cut themselves and they go on and on and on. And of course, nothing happens. The sacrifice still lays there. And that would have been okay because now it's Elijah's turn. Well, Elijah just doesn't thank God. Well, yeah, he can burn up the sacrifice. Instead, Elijah gets water and he pours it on the sacrifice. Now, anybody here ever tried to light a campfire with water? Usually doesn't work real well. But he doesn't take just one bucket of water or two buckets of water. He uses three buckets of water to soak this sacrifice. In fact, it says the water has filled up the cistern around it. There's so much water. He then calls on God, and God burns up everything. He didn't limit God. You know, he didn't add a little extra kindling to get that fire going. In fact, he did just the opposite because he knew the power of his God. And isn't that what we do sometimes? We forget about the power of our God. We limit him because we think, oh, God can't possibly do that. Oh, he wouldn't. Oh, maybe he might. No, our God can do anything he wants. Whatever you have is enough to God. is enough for God. But I encourage you to be like Elijah. Expect God to do wonders. Expect God to change your life. Expect God to pour a miracle into those around you. Expect to see a miracle. And lastly, what I want to talk about is that boy with the lunch. Now, we know very little about that kid. And so I have to use a little, what they call literary license here. But I've got a pretty active imagination. Can you imagine? I'm just going to call him a 10-year-old because my grandson's 10 years old, so I can know how my grandson would be. So here they all standing around, and all these adults, suddenly one looks over at this little kid and says, "Hey, let's take his lunch." Kid's probably going, "Hey, no way, man. It's my lunch. It's my lunch." Come on, these are all adults. I mean, he actually came to see Jesus, and now they're talking about stealing his lunch. So he's got to be thinking all kinds of things. And I bet he had an internal struggle. Now, I may hear about this when I get up to the Bema Seat of Christ and said, Christ may say, "Really? Really? You use that? All those examples?" But I think he had a struggle. I think he had a struggle internally that went something like this. First off, he's got to be thinking, "Really? How about, okay, I've got 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. How about you take 1 fish and 2 pieces of bread? Leave me something." I mean, that's right? Don't we do that? You know, "Hey, I'll give you, you know, yeah, I got my tax return back. Yeah, I'll give you, all right, God said I have to give you 10. So is that before or after taxes? You know, okay, I'll give you this much. You know, I'll give this much to the church." Or, "Man, I got some extra time. I could probably volunteer, oh, maybe at Marion, but oh my gosh. So I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll write them a check. I'll just write them a check." You know, so he probably struggled with how much God was asking for him. And let's not forget, who probably packed his lunch? His mom, right? I mean, I don't know about first century Israel too much, but I don't think moms have changed that much. I mean, can you imagine coming home and telling your mom, "Hey, mom, the big guys down there took my lunch." Yeah, so he's probably thinking, "Huh, I've also got the wrath of my mom. If I come home and say I'm hungry, she's going to say, 'Well, what happened to your lunch?' And is she going to believe you when you say the big guys down at the thing took my lunch?" Probably not. You know, we get that call from God to give all we have. You know, there's a story in the book of Mark. When you walked into the temple, you were asked to give your money at the temple entrance. And they had buckets there, buckets, whatever they call them. And they had coins, right? They didn't have mud dollar bills, they had coins. So what happens when you drop a lot of money or coins into a bucket? Makes a lot of noise. Yeah, it's loud. And that does what? It draws people's attention. Well, look at that guy. Look at all the money he gave. But this is what God says. This is what Jesus said about people like that. He says, calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, "I tell you the truth." So what happens is Jesus then sees a widow give 1 penny. So all she gives is 1 penny. And Jesus says, "I tell you the truth. This poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. They all gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything. All she had to live on." So this internal struggle probably went on and on. And we have that same struggle with us today in our lives, right? But he also probably had an internal struggle about what to give for others. Jim's been talking about the one another's, right? And so often we don't give thinking of others. We only give thinking of ourselves. And lastly, I bet the boy probably struggled with his faith. Again, he was asked to give his all. And some of us struggle with that, right? Some of us struggle with giving our all to those around us. Philippians 2, 3 and 4 says, "Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only to yourselves, but to the interests of others. Your attitude should be the same as that of Christ Jesus." And what was his attitude? He died for us. He gave his all for us. So what is Jesus asking for you? He's asking us to surrender all. Not a little bit, not some of it, but all. Give it all to him. You know, the disciples began to distribute the food, and they said they fed 5,000 men, but you know, they probably figured there was more like 15,000 or 20,000 people there. All fed with two loaves, or two fishes and two loaves of bread. You know, when we do give our all and we surrender our all, we don't get more Jesus. We get to experience him more and more. When I met my wife, and let's see if I can get this straight, because I almost messed up first service. When I met my wife, I can tell you this, and she still is the most beautiful woman I have ever seen. She caught my eye like from a block away. But, you know, I didn't know my wife. I didn't get to experience my wife until these 42 years I've been married to her. Because I get to see her every day. I get to see the love she has for others, the care she has for others, the mother, the wife she is. And I get to experience her, and that's how Christ is. As you give your all to him, as you experience him, you get to experience his love for others and for you the more and more you surrender to him. He is love, and when you experience him and you share him, you are sharing his attributes of love. You become love. And that's something we all want more and more of. So our miracles point to Jesus. And what is Jesus asking? He's asking for us for all we have. But for some of you here, maybe this is the first time you've heard of this miracle. This may be the first time you've heard of Jesus. I urge you to go back to the prayer room. And there's men and women there who would love to talk to you, explain what Jesus really means and what he can and the miracle he can perform in your life. But for many of us here, you've already given your heart to Christ, but you're holding some things back. You're not giving your all. There's maybe it's money, maybe it's finance, maybe it's time, maybe it's whatever it is. You're holding something back from him. He's asking for your all. And you know, when you surrender your all to him, you can't lose. It's not like the Chumash Casino where you can definitely lose. But we know how that story ends, right? If you have given your heart to Christ, when you close your eyes here for the last time, and we've recently lost several people here at this church, but I can tell you this, I knew both of them well, and they didn't lose. They're in heaven right now, and they are celebrating, and that's why we cannot lose. So I just ask you, surrender your all to him. Let me close this in prayer. Lord, I just want to thank you for all that are here. I thank you for their hearts. Lord, I thank you for the miracles that I'm sure many could share with up here today, because I know you have moved in many lives here in this church and in this community and in this world, Lord. And I just ask now that you continue to work your miracles in their lives. Help us to open our hearts to those around us, to share that miracle, to point people back to Christ. And Lord, for those that may be struggling with surrender, I just ask that you just give them that heart to recognize that you will multiply whatever you give them, whatever they give you. Lord, I just thank you and I praise you for every man and woman and child that are here. And I ask a blessing again on all those here. And all God's people said, amen.
Hey, thanks for joining us. If you enjoyed today's podcast, don't forget to subscribe and share it with a friend. A special thanks to those of you who give generously to this ministry. It's because of you that this ministry is possible. If you'd like to find out more information about giving or to see what's going on in the life of our church, please visit us at fccsantamaria.org. Thanks again for listening, and God bless.